join the conversation, 770-KMED. Derek Cohen joins me right now. And Derek Cohen is a senior policy analyst for Right on Crime, rightoncrime.com. And there's an interesting take on what's going on with the criminal justice system. It's bipartisan, too. Derek, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Oh, Bill, thanks for having me.
All right, so Right on Crime, could you tell us a little bit about what that all is about, first off? Now, when it's right, am I assuming this is the right wing, on crime, or just right as incorrect? What do you say?
Well, I would actually say both. We are a conservative criminal justice campaign. We mm-hmm. support policies that generally do better by public safety. They protect the victims, and they also manage to lower costs in the states that where they're enacted.
Where has this been done so far successfully as far as working on over-criminalization? This has been something that has been talked about for a long, long time, but I don't know how much has actually been done to solve this.
Oh, certainly. Well, I have to say we're a project of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and Texas has been one of the banner states in reducing the strain that the correctional and criminal justice system places on the average everyday taxpayer. You mentioned over-criminalization, and that's just one facet of our work. If you look at the legislative session that just concluded, we had several victories for over-criminalization. We had a bill that went through that adjusted property offense thresholds to where they were originally when they were enacted. So in other words, if you look at, the certain offense limits, how much one has to, let's say, cause in property damage in order to go from a misdemeanor to a felony, just through the natural course of inflation, that law becomes more punitive and more punitive every year. So we passed a bill that actually adjusts that limit to where it was when it was originally codified in 1993, and this would actually allow victims to be made whole much easier. Obviously, somebody that is put on probation and allowed to keep a job is able to make restitution much more quickly than somebody that's put in a state facility. Also, with over-criminalization, we codified the rule of lenity. In other words, if you have a law that has two reasonably acceptable interpretations, the tie is going to go to the runner. It will err on the side of the defendant. And also, it convenes a commission that will look at some of the laws outside of the penal code, like harvesting oysters at night or thrashing up a country, both of which are actually crimes in Texas, and recommend to the legislature in the 85th legislature to be had in 2017, which laws are unnecessary, redundant, or just plain silly.
Now, was former Governor Rick Perry a part of that?
Yes, actually, Rick. Now, while we only make it a habit not to sign on any active legislators or executives, after he, resigned from office, or after his term expired, I should say, earlier this year, he signed on to our statement of principles. And so now we have former Governor Rick Perry, we have former Governor Jeb Bush, we have now current Governor Asa Hutchinson, and this kind of underscores the trend of the state executive to understand that with the growing cost of the criminal justice system, reform is needed, and there tends to be a better way, and those are some of the solutions we offer.
When you talk about the better way, you mentioned how, certainly we can reduce increase the threshold, I guess, before someone becomes a felon. I get that. If someone said, all right, felony is at $500, and $500 in 93, that'd probably be about $1,000 right now. Is that one of the examples that you're talking about?
Yes, that's just one of the examples. And obviously, examples abound insofar as, say, prioritizing community corrections above carceral sanctions, again, for low-level nonviolent offenders who qualify. Because if you look at just, again, back in, use Texas as an example, to incarcerate someone in Texas, it's going to run you about $54 a day. Meanwhile, keeping them on community supervision is going to cost you $3. Now, if this individual, thoroughly vetted risk assessment, poses no threat of recidivism, poses very little threat to the community, they can be monitored at the same, product of public safety, with much less burden on the taxpayer.
What kind of cost savings are we talking about, Derek? By the way, Derek Cohen is here. He's with Right on Crime, senior policy analyst there.
Well, certainly. The example, again, with Texas, we actually had a moment back in 2007 where the cost savings were all too real. The legislature that convened that year had to make a very, very tough decision. They had to face deciding between building 17,000 new prison beds, and that would have put $2.1 billion mm-hmm. in additional overhead on the correctional system, in addition to what's already being paid in overhead and personnel costs. And at that point, it was, you know, the incarceration problem, or using that as the default modality for treating this, was simply out of control. So the legislature, under the guidance of Corrections Chairman Jerry Madden in the House and Criminal Justice Chairman John Whitmire in the Senate, they really reevaluated some of our laws and some of our processes, and they started doing what's now commonly known as justice reinvestment. They started looking at what can we do to keep people in the community, you know, again, appropriate people in the community, sure. as opposed to putting them behind bars as a default option. And so we actually strengthened our community correctional system while reserving, you know, the space behind bars to those that would pose a threat to public safety. And not only did we avoid having to build those additional facilities, you know, as Governor Perry mentioned yesterday, we've actually closed three full-size adult facilities since 2009. So it's actually our, even amidst this unprecedented population boom in Texas, the actual raw number of people that are incarcerated has gone down.
So how do the people react when they see something like this? I'm sure that they love the idea that they're not having to spend as much money. We get that. But when you hear, I know when I hear people around here in Southern Oregon, although we may not have the level of violent crime that some other areas may have, property crime is such, how do I put it, it has such a corrosive effect on the community. Do you see where I'm coming from on this one, Derek? And I just don't know if lightening up on taking people off the streets, although I like the idea of saving money, does it really help the quality of life issues here for people when they go with these kind of policies?
No, certainly. That's a very real observation. I would have to say that if we look at the number one goal of Right on Crime and of conservative criminal justice reform writ large, the number one goal is public safety, and that is not to include only violent crimes; it's to include property crimes. But if you look at some of these reforms where they have been enacted, and you know where they're coming online now, it actually leads to steeper reductions in not only recidivism, but in initial first-time offending to begin with. So what we generally see is if the individual is going to offend, let's say, through a property offense, if the individual is going to offend the first time and they have a choice between, and, you know, it's on a knife's edge between a carceral sanction behind bars or a sanction in the community, we can produce much better results in the long run. In other words, will this person have a greater propensity to reoffend in the long run on in which particular track? We can produce much better results in the community correction because, A, they keep a job. They're still able to maintain employment. B, they're still earning money, so they're actually able to make restitution to their victim. And, C, it's keeping their family whole and keeping their individual members of their family from basically relying on the government for other necessities. So it actually
I was going to say that is a great statement right there. That if you're trying to make victims whole and keeping someone employed, that makes an awful lot of sense. And so I appreciate that. We have Paul and Talent wanted to ask a question or a comment on this too. Derek Cohen, once again here, is here. He's the senior policy analyst for Right on Crime. And let me see if I can get you. I'm doing everything by remote this morning. So Paul, how are you doing this morning? Go ahead.
Yeah. I'd just like to ask about the impact of the Violence Against Women Act. We're just getting word today that restraining orders are going to be the subject of a new bill for increasing the penalties to a C felony here in Oregon. And it seems to me that there's an escalation prosecutors get the overcharge, and they use that overcharging for intimidation purposes. And I just see the whole abuse of the restraining order system as being destructive of families and everything else, destructive of rights. You can't own a gun if you have a restraining order. So that's my question. The whole Violence Against Women Act has taken away rights of men and has put many of us who've ever crossed our wives in a contentious battle in the jail, in the slammer, for no
that's
reason
right.
at all.
Paul, appreciate the take on that, and thanks for that. Derek, would you comment on that? I know that you're dealing mostly, it sounds like, with property crimes, but this is very serious. This is another aspect in which the state really gets involved in people's interpersonal relationships, sometimes without a whole lot of evidence when it comes to these restraining orders. Does Right on Crime have a take on that?
I brought up many points there. As far as violent crimes, well, we know that violent offenders, you know, they tend to be on average when it comes to recidivism and when it comes to, you know, the amount of damage, they tend to be a little more, I would say they're a little heavier offenders to begin with. So in other words, if we have somebody that would, you know, violate somebody in a way that would get a restraining order typically, that usually tends to be a little more serious than your average property offender. Now, again, he also brought up a very good point about overcharging. Now, overcharging writ large is a problem. Overcharging writ large is a way that certain prosecutors, and by I have to say, by no means all, basically maintain the leverage in the criminal justice system and use it to their advantage. But I think that the caller's general theme underscores the importance of actually having good victim-centric policy on the issue. You know, having good victim-centric policy on domestic violence, which in and of itself is a very, very complex subset of crimes, I think that really does have to thread a very careful needle there. As far as Oregon's laws specifically, I can't really comment on that. I know that when we look at escalating the offenses, or actually escalating the punishment for certain offenses, that doesn't necessarily beget a benefit in public safety. But that's not to say that in and of itself is an illegitimate use of state power or an illegitimate use of the legislator adjusting the penalties. I just think that it would behoove legislators to make sure they're drawing from a solid body of research before doing so.
All right, Derek, we appreciate your take and analysis on it. It seems to be a growing trend, and I have to tell you, my email box gets some form of, hey, we're trying to reform what's going on with the criminal justice system. And where would people go to find out more about Right on Crime and so they can take a look for themselves?
Well, they're more than welcome to come by our website at rightoncrime.com, and that has our that's the actual website of our campaign, so that'll tell you you know, if we have any events coming up or what states we're active in at any given time. Or you could go to the Texas Public Policy Foundation's website, texaspolicy.com, which provides, which, similar to Right on Crime, has free markets, individual responsibility, and freedom-oriented policies as well, obviously in the latter case focusing specifically on the state of Texas.
All right, very much. Appreciate you being on the program this morning. Be well, Derek. Thanks again.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, Bill.